This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
What's up, people? Welcome back to Rebranded Safety. Today we are reflecting on my conversation with Carsten Busch. Let's jump into the intro and then we'll chat some more.
The problem in safety isn't deviation, it's complexity.
Health and safety has gone mad.
Health and safety is trying to unpick having gone mad in the past.
There's no one solution and one problem. The problem is that we are looking for one solution.
Does the structure of the team allow them to flourish?
Feel safe enough to be uncomfortable.
The environment defines our behaviours.
People aren't the problem, they're the solution.
Rebranding safety, crushing a stereotype. Brought to you by RiskFit.
What's up, people? Welcome back to Rebranded Safety. Rebranded Safety is doing exactly what it says on the tin. We're here to change the perception of health and safety. We do that here on the podcast, and we do that on YouTube as well. So if you're new here, hit all those buttons, the follow button, whatever it is, subscribe. This is a podcast only episode, so no one's watching us on YouTube. It's just me chatting away. Now, a couple of caveats for this episode. I've got a new toy. The Rodecaster Pro. So literally recording all of this background music, intro, the brought to you by Safety FM, all of that stuff live, which is cool AF, but means it might be messy, as especially the kind of background music. I mean, not sure how that's going to work, because this thing got like 2 minutes left of this clip, and then what do I do? Do I put another one on? Do I play this one again? I don't know. Well, I'm going to wing it. Let's see how it goes. So, reflecting on my chat with Carsten Busch, I've got to say, probably one of the most kind of enlightening chats. One of the most important things we needed to hear in this Safety 1, Safety 2 space. That is what I think, that would be my summary. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. That would be my summary of my conversation with Carsten. It would be that what he says we need to hear, and frankly, a lot more of us need to take on board. But let's go through some of my notes. Firstly, he kind of started off giving us a very good background of Heinrich. So Herbert William, I think, if I remember rightly, Heinrich. And what I loved about it was a couple of things. That it kind of come from very humble beginnings, you know, it's kind of an engineering kind of background, where he's kind of, oh, hang on a minute, I'm reading the wrong notes here. I'm reading notes about Carsten background, about Herbert. This has gone terribly wrong already, but I don't want to waste all of this good mixing I've done, so I'm just going to crack on. So actually what I'm talking about here is Carsten's history. So interesting that Carsten mentioned early on that he's come from like a really engineering focused role, and kind of doing that shift over to like a real people focused role, which I feel like is a natural transition for a lot of us. Definitely one I've gone through. I wouldn't say engineering, but I definitely have gone through like this technical focused role, and now shifting over to people focus. So I think it's interesting, and I don't really want to talk about like what the safety profession should be in the future, because I'm saving that for another episode, which actually brings me to one of my points that I need to say. That in the intro to Carsten's interview, I said there's only two more conversations left of this mini series, which is wrong. I got it wrong, people. We've actually got an interview with David Provan, which needs to come out, where he's kind of talking about, we talk about loads of stuff, as per usual, but we talk quite heavily around his research around like the safety professional. So I'm going to leave some of the stuff around that shift from technical to people, and maybe what our profession may or may not be in the future, or what my opinion of it all is to that reflection. So we're not going to touch on that too much anymore. He said that he's kind of always been fascinated. I've always been fascinated by how we approach risk and safety, and be kind of resilient in things like the police force and the fire service. I think What an interesting dilemma we kind of have there, that, you know, normally, and I think I said this in my conversation with Carsten, but normally we're kind of, you know, getting people to stay away from the risk, whereas actually in that, those kind of roles, we're sending people directly into the risk. So I think that's really interesting kind of dilemma, and I think it's one that we are talking quite heavily around in safety too, is having that kind of capacity to fail, because the environment is so dynamic in those types of roles, is you have to build up enough capacity to fail safely, which I kind of like. I love that Carsten kind of says that he's fascinated by uncertainty. Like, I love that. And I think that uncertainty, that complexity, is essentially what this Safety 2 space is talking a lot about. And I think it's fascinating in a way, and especially when we look on what we'll discuss in a second, or what you've listened to already around Heinrich, and how actually some of the stuff that he'd done still works, but for the simple problems, not necessarily the complex problems. So we've kind of got two different types of world here. And it's interesting, I've just been messaging literally last night, messaging a gentleman, giving me some very kind feedback about the podcast, where he was talking about my reflection on, I think it was John Green's podcast. And I was talking about, like, the simplicity of some of the stuff, and he was saying, you know, I think I was talking around, like, the use of language and the use of kind of trying to explain stuff to our leaders in the workplace, and that actually a lot of the time we need to make things simple, which essentially is what Herbert was doing, Herbert Heinrich. He's communicating to managers, so he's adjusted his message for the audience and made it really simple. And then I was talking to this gentleman on LinkedIn, and I was saying, do you know what's interesting? The more and more I think about this, and more of these conversations go on, it's like, safety is unbelievably complex. And that's why in our intro, we've taken a snippet from my conversation with Ron Gant all those months and months ago, where we've said that, you know, the problem is complexity. The problem is not people, it's how complex our problems actually are, and our businesses and our social technical environments that we're operating in, how complex that actually is. And then when we look at the conversations, or not conversations, the critical, the criticism, there we go, think of the word, James, the criticism for a lot of this stuff, the triangle, the dominoes, just the conversations that people have on LinkedIn and so on and so forth, a lot of the time, the problem is that we're trying to make it really simple. One of the problems, anyway, I should probably correct myself, is that we're trying to make a lot of this quite simple. So we're trying to simplify it. So when someone goes, well, what is safety too? You inherently try to simplify it. Well, therein lies the problem, is that when you simplify something, it loses a lot of the context that we need in those kind of complex theories and approaches that we have to safety. So it's kind of like we need to have two different languages. We need to have a simple way, a way of simplifying stuff for an audience that needs it simplified, that doesn't need to be bogged down by all the complexities of human factors and kind of socioeconomics and social technical problems and all this stuff, and people that just do not need to get into that. And then there's another side where we talk to kind of the safety professionals that are heavily in this conversation. And that's where we go deep. That's where we get real heavy on this. And maybe there's even a language in the middle of that. People like myself who are going through this transition from, I don't know, traditional safety to new safety, if we want to call it that. Not really sure, but that was kind of my initial thoughts around it. So let's kind of look at some of my notes. I think there's something that we need to take away from. There's a lot. There's so much we could take away from Carsten. And one of the things is that we need to be a little bit more critical in our thinking and not taking everything on face value. So, for example, when we go in the Safety 2 space, a lot of us go, well, you know, it's just about not blaming people. You know, because when we blame, we can't learn. Well, that's correct. And I agree with that. but we live in a world of blame. We exist in a world of blame. You only have to watch Prime Minister's questions in the UK for like 2 minutes and you'll see that we exist in a world of blame. So how is it that we could go to leaders and tell them, well, you can't blame our people, our workers, our employees, because we'll never learn. But they're sitting there, well I'm going to get blamed. My stakeholders, my shareholders, my insurers, etc., the board are all going to hold me to account if something goes wrong. The enforcer is going to hold me to account if something goes wrong. Damn, I could go to jail because that's what I am as a CEO. And some might say, well, that's why you get paid the big bucks, blah, blah, blah. And that's a fair point. But we don't exist in a world of no blame. So we need to be a bit more critical in how we look at things. And I think we can simplify things and say, you know, well, it's about no blame and you can't learn when you blame, and that's very good. But as safety professionals, we need to be a little bit more critical in exploring that statement a little bit more. Is there a time to blame? Is there a time to not blame? So we kind of take that as a blanket rule. We don't blame, we learn. But actually, a lot of people I speak to, they say, well, blame still does exist. People are still held to be account. You know, where people are genuinely sabotaging a system, someone's being genuinely malicious, then there is a kind of cause for blame. So I think when we're having these conversations, we need to be a bit more critical and not take everything on face value. And also, you know, have a look if that is the direct quote of something. And I'm going to finish off on a very closely related statement, which I think is important. So I'm not really going to discuss this anymore because I'm going to come back to it at the end, because there is something I want to finish on in this reflection. So I am going to kind of leave it there and move on to the next point. So when I said about humble beginnings, I was talking about Herbert Heinrich, but was reading my notes to Carsten. So now I'm on track of my notes. Heinrich, I love that he had such humble beginnings. Like, this guy was a boiler engineer, fought in World War One. Like, the guy is a bloody hero. Like, there's no umming and ahhing about it. He is a hero. And then come back, and not only kind of like fought the war, he's come back and he's gone, right, need to find a job, gets a job, then gets a, you know, that career, and then becomes actually like the bloody grandfather, the kind of founding father, so to speak, of safety. Obviously there are more people that were involved, but this guy's a bloody legend, and we owe Heinrich so much. And yes, his work does deserve criticism, and yes, that criticism is good and it enables you to the next thing. But, well, like I said in the podcast, we have to give this man some respect in the amount of work that he has done and where that's led us in the world that we live in now. Like, he's responsible for just better workplaces in general. So I think that was one thing I took away from this, that, you know, I was humbled by it, in that I've probably been unfair in my criticism of Heinrich. Interesting as well, in the notes I've got here, that it's interesting that he was working in insurance. So he was kind of doing this proactive stuff from insurance. Insurance was a lot more kind of morally focused, maybe, than maybe it is now. And I think maybe insurers kind of lost their way through the middle, but you do start to see a little bit of that now. There's a lot of those big, especially the bigger insurers, coming out with, like, and maybe this was around before, you know, and I'll stand corrected if it was, but there's like some insurers that now have like funds for you to proactively improve your safety performance within your business, because that's mutually beneficial. They're doing a little bit more, you know, there's a lot more insurers that are, you know, funding research and stuff like that. So I feel like we're coming back round to this, insurers being more proactive and maybe the driving force in a lot of things. I think we've got a long way to come, but I think that's reassuring. And it's interesting that that seems to have been their roots, in that, you know, essentially Heinrich was working for an insurance, and he was the one that kind of, well, like I say, was the godfather or the grandfather of safety. So I think it's worth just that final kind of hat tip and thank you to Heinrich. That kind of just saying, cheers, mate. You know, we kind of owe you one. And I think we need to appreciate his work. So anyway, that's my point there. I think it's interesting now that we struggle as to the kind of what is a safety professional. And it was interesting as well that Carsten mentioned that actually Heinrich was more of a management professional, less of a safety professional. Maybe a safety professional didn't really exist back then, but I think that's interesting that seems to be a constant challenge for our profession, in that we don't really have a clear place to sit. I mean, I've sat in about 4 or 5 different management lines or areas of operation within companies throughout my career, and I've not even really been doing this that long. So there seems to have been originally, and there still is now, a real difficulty in understanding where we actually sit in the business and maybe even what we should be doing. And I think, like I say, I'm going to talk about our profession in my reflection after my interview with David Provan. But we are kind of struggling with like an identity crisis at the moment. But it's interesting to see that even back then, Heinrich kind of had a similar challenge or a similar problem. So let's have a look what else I've got. I've got so many notes from this conversation with Carsten. I think it's interesting that kind of simplicity thing that I was talking about earlier, and the kind of 3 different languages we need to have. I think we need to be so aware of the audience that we're trying to communicate with. And I think, you know, I think about that from the podcast point of view, like who is my audience? And it's still changing now. What language should you use in the podcast? What language should you use in your conversations at work? And what about your training sessions, in your policies and procedures, etc.? And what are the risks of using that language? So as we kind of talked about in the episode, you know, the dominoes, the triangle, etc., they're metaphors, they're illustrations, they're intended to communicate a message in a very simple manner. And that was because his intended audience was management professionals. People that are extremely busy, people that don't have time to go into the technical side of things. So therefore, he was right in the way he approached that issue. But there was a risk to that, because people that wanted a more complex system criticized the basic level, the helicopter view, so to speak, of the simplicity of side of it by saying that, well, you know, we're going to get 3,000 accidents or near misses. That means we're going to have this many, and then eventually we're going to kill someone. And it's like we took that as a kind of one trick pony, and then gone, oh, right, well, Heinrich was obviously an idiot and clearly didn't know what he was talking about. Was actually, no. What he was trying to do was communicate some kind of very simple imagery, illustration and metaphors to the company to say, there are indicators within your businesses that you should probably look at that will help you predict to a point, you know, a serious accident. And we kind of have evolved and then lost the context of that original intention and then gone, oh, right. So basically, we can exactly predict through numbers and statistics of when a fatality is going to happen. No, we can't. So, yeah, interesting. When we talked about the triangle it illustrates that we miss a lot of opportunities to learn, and that kind of for me was like, well, hence the creation of near misses. There were opportunities to learn, and then I feel like Eric Koenigel and his work in safety too has then just evolved that even further to say, well, there's even more opportunities to learn in how where we succeed in a business. So it's not necessarily a criticism of Heinrich's work, but actually an evolution of Heinrich's work, which essentially is what John Green talks about, is what Kevin Furness talks about, is what Adam Johns talks about. There is a trend coming here. This is just a natural evolution. And in 5 years' time, 10 years' time, 20 years' time, whatever, I'm going to be a really old man. hopefully I'm just living off the coattails of this podcast and just doing the odd keynote every now and then and making big bucks, you know, because I've wrote a couple of books, blah, blah, blah. And there'll be people saying how wrong I was, how wrong Adam Johns was. You know, he's very young, so he's at the pinnacle of his career, prime opportunity. So he's got miles to go. I think they're going to be criticizing the work that we've done, the interviews that we've done, the webinars that we've done, and going, well, they were idiots, you know, safety too. What? We don't blame people. And I don't know, what was another saying? We can find ways to learn from our successes. What a stupid statement. And that is inevitable. And damn, it's a good thing. So I just felt like, well, I'm pretty much repeating myself. Let's be honest. I am repeating myself. But when we argue about safety one and when we are critical of Heinrich, I think it's very clear that we're not actually arguing or debating the theories as they are originally intended. So I can only hope that when people look back on, like I say, stuff that I've done, stuff that Adam Johns is doing, stuff that Eric's done, Sydney's done, Todd's done, anyone, I just hope that people can try and have a bit of local rationality that can go, well, what were they thinking at the time? What was the context of the situation at the time? Oh, this was the environment at the time, therefore I can see why they're going there. So I'm not going to overly be critical of their work, but I'm just going to evolve it. I feel like if we had that mindset, we might be a hell of a lot further than where we are now. So anyway, that was just a little bit of a messy rant I went on there, but a lot of the time we just, when we're arguing about this stuff, we're not actually arguing about the theories. And I stand by this, and I have for this whole mini-series. We're arguing about the poor implementation of theories. We're arguing about the misinterpretation of some theories, of some approaches. Behaviour-based safety is a perfect example of that. And I'm going to touch on, it's kind of all coming around the same point here. And I realise that I'm saying the same thing over and over, but in a different way. But behavior-based safety is a clear example of that. Like, that is commonly put in the safety one box. Like Taylorism, behavior-based safety, and all that. And that the way that people describe behavior-based safety is that we basically find the bad behaviours, slap the wrist, and tell them to go back to work or discipline them. And there's so much more to it, like as Carsten says, you know, that Taylor he even says in his work about looking at the environment that you're in. And as I've said time and time again, Scott Geller says the environment defines the behaviours. So I just think we need to be very aware of what we're being critical of. And be clear on that, because it's okay to be critical of something, 100%, because that's how we evolve. Dissenting opinions is a damn good thing. But we can be respectful whilst we do that, and we can be clear on what we're being critical of. And damn, we could be understanding when someone's critical of our criticism as well. So when someone, you know, if we're going to be critical of something, then someone needs to have, you need to have that kind of what's the phrase, like your personal resilience to have somebody come back and say, well, no, actually, your criticism is wrong. That's not right. This is this, and this is why. And you go, oh, okay, I didn't think of it like that. So that's a very fair point. And then you go, okay, cool, we've all learned here, and we can move on. Evolution. So I love that that's how John Green talks about it, that natural evolution of safety, of work, and so on and so forth. So that's just one thing for us to be aware of, I think, is that, like, let's be aware of what we're being critical of and be clear of what we're being critical of. Let me move on through my notes. The dominoes. I mean, this was just a fascinating conversation, in that, and this for me is, this comes back to my buffet example that I mentioned in the conversation, that the domino theory is essentially like the accident theory, as Heinrich called it. And the criticism for that comes from the depiction of it being so linear, like the process of it being so linear. Oh, this was a cause for that, and therefore this and that, and it implicates everything so simple. therefore enter the criticism where they say, no, it's too complex, everything's more complex than that, there's so much more context, it's never as simple as that. But it was interesting that the way Carsten said it was that, well, actually, yes, you are correct, but some things are not that complex, some things are quite simple, in which case the domino theory would work really well. Because let's not make complexity out of nothing. Like, if it's just a molehill, let's not turn it into a mountain. Let's just use the dominoes and crack on. Which I quite liked. So to me, it was like, well, okay. Let's look at this then. So what we've got is the dominoes. Okay, we'll keep that. We've got the, I don't know, Swiss cheese, for example. We've got five whys. You know, there's three things that probably somebody will go, they're all saved in one. You know, and then you've got human factors. So don't limit yourself to one group. Like, just keep all of these tools in your toolbox. Learn them all. Don't be like, well, no, I'm a hot professional, so I'm just gonna do that. Like, yeah, I would probably say I sit on the more of the hop side of things. That stuff seems to make more sense to me. But damn, I'm still gonna use a five whys when I need to. 100%. Nothing wrong with that, because sometimes that works for me. And I think I'm just going to read some notes here, but I'm just reading my notes and reading that doesn't make any sense. Criticism comes from linearity. Safety 2 movement is the back of complexity. Yeah, so it's kind of safety 2, you know, it says that a lot of this is complex. And again, we'll come back to that Ron Gantt statement. I'm just reading my notes. One apologies. I'm completely lost. Anyway, right, I'm going to move on. My next note is I'm probably going to finish on this point, actually. I understand that last couple of minutes was a bit messy. I have a warning for everybody. This is one thing I've learned in probably just this year of doing this podcast and this kind of baptism of fire that I've had within the Safety 1, Safety 2 space. It's something that I've picked up from two places. And primarily it's from the conversations that I've had with a lot of people in the Safety 1 and Safety 2 space. But also there's a saying that I'm going to use at the end of this, which I've stolen from Drew Ray and David Provan on the Safety of Work podcast. Because what they say on the Safety of Work podcast is go to the source. They always say, if you're going to read someone's writing, go to their writing and read it. Don't read someone else's quotation of their work, go to their work. So go to the source. And I say this because there is a certain Safety 2 academic out there that's kind of claiming that behavioral-based safety doesn't or hasn't previously said things like the environment defines the behaviours, until Safety 2 came along and said the environment defines the behaviours, basically. Which is not true. As Carsten said in that conversation, you know, Taylor talks about the looking at the environment. So, and that, that, you know, Safety 2 is not the only people that do it. You know, there's Safety 1 people that, and I don't even want to say the Safety 1 people and Safety 2 people, you know, that, why do we have to segregate these people? Like, geez, come on, it's the 21st century. But there are people in each camps, if you want to put them in camps, that do misrepresent, they do make comments that are factually incorrect, and they do say, oh, they didn't do this until we come along. Frankly, I don't care. Like, I really don't care who said it first, whether it was environments define the behaviours or the context drive the behaviours, or behaviour is this, or, you know, everything's complex, or, I don't care who said it. Like, I'm going to buy all of the books. I've got Geller books, I've got Conklin books, I've got Eric books, you know, and I listen to all of the stuff on the internet, and it makes no odds to me. I've got Decker books. I'm picking stuff from all of them that work. So I think the lesson that we can kind of come back here is twofold. which you would have picked up from my conversation with Carson anyway, but it's that being critical of things, have that critical thinking kind of process. So when I say be critical, I don't mean criticize. I mean, be critical of what you're reading. Like, don't take things on face value. Have a bit more of a critical thinking mindset. I think, you know, that's been kind of career defining for me since coming across that kind of way of thinking and so on. And the next one would be that local rationality. I think when we, especially when we are criticizing people's work, it's that old saying, isn't it? My grandma used to say, put yourself in their shoes. Like, Jesus Christ, you know, none of this stuff is new. We do that. We should do that at work. We should do that at home. We should do that when we're criticizing the government, for God's sake. We should do that in every single case. And frankly, trust me, you become so much less stressed when you do that. When you put yourself in someone's shoes, when you think, okay, well, what's the context? Well, I don't know the context, therefore I'm not going to judge. Like, it's like a weight off your shoulders. And when you're doing it at work, you know, it creates better work. Like, if you're doing an accident investigation and you're trying to understand why somebody made that decision, instead of just blaming them for making that decision, you're trying to understand what drove you to make that decision. Well, then you're able to get an understanding of something that drove them to that behavior. Therefore, you can potentially stop somebody else being driven to that behavior. And then from a personal point of view, which I was hinting to a second ago, is looking for context and things and trying to put yourself in other people's shoes. It's like a conversation I had with my mother the other day when we were driving from my town to where she lives. And some guy did something in a car, I can't remember. And she was just like, oh my God, I hate it when people do that. I hate it when people do that. And I was like, why? And she was like, well, you know, it's just they're overtaking you, they get in front of you. I was like, yeah, but why does it matter to you? Just let them go in front of you. And frankly, like, if they're driving dangerous, I want them as far away from me as possible. But let's say somebody does do something a bit annoying, a bit naughty on the roads. It's out of your control. And if they do that and you get all stressed and that, and I used to do this, I used to get so annoyed at people, so annoyed. And I'm like, who's the one getting stressed here? It's only me getting stressed. They're not stressed. They've overtook me and buggered off. And we're probably not even going to the same place, so it really doesn't matter. So I think just being a little less kind of, I don't know, judgy about things and uptight and be a bit more relaxed. And also, we don't know if that guy just cut me up and overtook me and is going 100 miles an hour because he's on the way to hospital because his wife's giving birth. Or we don't know if it's, you know, a woman's rushing to see her father that's poorly or something. Like, we don't know any of the context. And Gary Vee says this all the time in his podcast and his work and his keynotes and his videos, etc., is you can't judge people without context. And I just think context is absolutely everything. And we do not do that in the safety profession when we are critical of other people's work, whether you're on the safety one side being critical of safety two, or you're on safety two being critical of safety one. Nobody gives a hat tip. Nobody tries to understand the context of why that was there. Nobody goes to the source of the information. We take things on face value with no context, and we just start being critical. So there's my little rant for the day. I think Carsten is saying a lot of sense, making a lot of sense. He's saying a lot of things that we are desperate to hear, and that's why I kind of said in the introduction that he's kind of like the police officer, ironically, holding us all to account and keeping us all in line. Like, he doesn't really pick sides. He just corrects us. Like, I've been in full-blown arguments where he's just, one minute he's like, actually, you know, you safety two guy over here, you're wrong. And then the next minute he's like, oh no, that safety one guy's right. He's literally just correcting he's just correcting our quotes and things like that to make sure that we're having an argument, but we're having the right argument, that we're arguing about something correct. And I think we need more people like Carsten in this world. So I hope you enjoyed that conversation. If you did, give it a share. I would greatly appreciate that. You know, all of this helps. I'm recording this at 5 days before Christmas. So I would say to you that, you know, please share, because I'm trying to get to 1,000 before the end of the year. You know, yes, the numbers are not the important thing, and yes, I appreciate all of my listeners, but damn, it would be cool to hit 1,000 just before the new year. But this will come out after the new year, so hell, God knows if we've made it. Hopefully we have. Have a look. If we have, drop me a message. Say, well done, James. If we haven't, say, commiserations, but I'm going to share the podcast for you. If you really like the podcast, you can do us a massive favour, a huge, huge favour, because it's Christmas, and give us a rate and review on iTunes, because that really, really helps us. And we really appreciate that. I'm going to do a Christmas New Year special anyway, so say Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. But I hope you did have a Happy Christmas, and I hope you did have a Happy New Year, or any kind of celebration you were having over that festive period. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you had a nice break. If you did have a break, I hope you did have a break. You know, we all deserve a bit of a break, and I hope it was a lovely time. So I shall catch you next week, where we'll be talking to David Provan. So remember, I said there was only 2 episodes left. I was incorrect. There's not only 2 episodes left. There is 3. So next week, we're talking to David Provan. And then after that, we'll be talking to Trita Swinton. And then after that, we'll be talking to Simon Cassin. And that will be the end of the Safety 2 miniseries. Thanks for listening, people. Safe.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the host and its guests and do not necessarily reflect the position of the companies. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are examples only, based on limited and dated open source information, and should not be utilised in real life as the only solution available. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the companies. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, or otherwise, without prior written permission from James McPherson.